Shemitah Shir, Oral Chav Dalet Kislev, Tuesday night. The guest Shir tonight, given by the famous gardener, Talmud Chacham, at least when it comes to gardening in Yanim, if you don't like what I say, Mr. Saul Glazer. Thank you for coming.
Okay, good evening, everybody. And thank you for having me. Thanks for inviting me, Rabbi Lindwitz. What we're going to look at tonight is practically, very much on a practical level, what to do with Shemitah. And we'll run through the actual sections that we go through. We'll discuss planting, pruning, fertilizing, weeding, watering, all the essential steps that we're involved in taking care of a garden, and how we deal with them very practically on Shemitah.
Can I just, these are following the horos of Machon HaTorah V'Aretz?
Correct. The sources for most of these, this is great, recommended reading, you probably have it and have looked at it. And we're going through the Hanchayot according to Machon HaTorah V'Aretz.
They're making a new edition for this year though, they told me.
I look forward to seeing it. This Saturday. Just by way of introduction, when we're gardening all over the world, then that's a fantastic thing. We're involved in nature and plants and trees and the Bria to an extent. But when we do those exact same actions in Eretz Israel, it takes on a complete different meaning. There's an aspect of Kedusha which is associated to all those actions that we do in gardening. And that Kedusha stems from the Kedusha of Eretz Israel as well. Allow me, I saw a lovely Dvar Torah last few weeks of Parshiot that we've been reading. And it says that the order goes, Vezacharti et Briti Yaakov, Vezacharti et Briti Yitzchak, Vezacharti et Briti Avraham, Ve'aretz Yizkor. There are not too many places where the order is reversed. We normally go Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, but not Yaakov Yitzchak Avraham. So they explain that we have the merit of our forefathers that we can rely on. We can rely always on Yaakov. If that fails us, we can rely on Yitzchak. If that fails us, we can rely on Abraham. If that fails us, Ve'aretz Yizkor. The land of Israel has something very special to it that stands in our merit always. And where do we see that? When Yaakov leaves Eretz Israel and he's on his way to Haran, then he has a dream and he wakes up and he realizes there's something very special about this place. And what does he say? He says, if I come back and everything's okay and I make it back to Israel, Vaya Hashem li le'elokim, then God will be my God. So again, the Mefarshim take him to task on it. They say, what is Yaakov negotiating with the Kadosh Baruch Hu? That if he looks after him and he returns him to Eretz Israel, then it will be alright for him. And if he doesn't, then it won't be his God. He says, no. He says, Yaakov realizes that there's a special relationship to be had with the Kadosh Baruch Hu that's only to be had in Eretz Israel. And where's the proof of this? When Yaakov is on his way back to Eretz Israel, he's fearful of Esav. This is Yaakov HaTzadik, who's fearful of Esav HaRasha. It doesn't make sense. Why would he fear? Hare, he knows who he is. He knows he's lived with Lavan. He knows that he's managed to stand up to difficult challenges and prevail. And yet, Esav, he knows who he is as well. Yeah? Esav is the Rasha. So what's the one ma'ala that Esav has that Yaakov is afraid of? Esav all this time has been in Eretz Israel. Yaakov has not been in Eretz Israel. Yaakov's been outside of Eretz Israel. His concern is that the ma'ala of being in Eretz Israel will be enough, perhaps, to conquer Yaakov, and that's his fear. So we have the zchut, the merit of being involved in Eretz Israel. When we're gardening in Eretz Israel, it's not just the gardening, but we're oskim b'kedusha, so to speak. And the Shana Shvi'it, the Shemitah, is like the Shabbat. We're busy for 6 years, and that seventh year is a time for introspection. And we connect through the land, through Eretz Israel. It's a trilogy of Am Israel in Eretz Israel with the Torah of Eretz Israel. And the Shvi'it is the focus on that. So,
technology.
Do good with it. So, I'm often asked questions about Shemitah. So I say, well, there are two approaches. You can be the Mekilim side or the Machmirim. I am very Machmir with this particular topic. And perhaps it would be easy to be Mekil. Being Mekil means just let everything die. Right? If you want to be Machmir, then you have to take care of it and let it live. The key thing to the Shiur Shemitah are going to be in one sentence, is for things to survive, not to thrive. And that's what we're going to be doing in Shemitah. So we want whatever we've made effort and planted and put into the ground, there's no need to let that get destroyed in any way. At the same time, we don't need to do actions that will make the plants thrive. There's one other point in the Sefer, it's brought down as a nice example that people have a vad bayit. And in the vad bayit, they have to decide whether to look after the gardens or not. So it leads to a big machloket. Some people say, well, we don't want to be looking after the gardens. Other people say, we do want to be looking after the gardens. But the point that, I think it's Rav Ariel, he brings down, he says, the point is not to have the machloket. The whole point of the Shemitah is the exact opposite of getting into arguments. Pay the vad bayit. If you're worried it's going to go to looking after the plants, never mind. You know, someone will take care of that. But you still have that responsibility of the lights, of the cleaning, whatever those other issues are. Not to use the Shemitah to land up making machlokot and to cause separation. So, at this stage, let's start getting into the actual halachot and different sections of the Shemitah. So, there are different times for planting. In general, anything that we plant will need 2 weeks before we can say it's fully taken, that it's taken its own roots. This is important to understand because there are timing differences just before Rosh Hashanah that we'll need to have our plants in the ground already, and depending on what the plants are. So if we're planting a fruit tree that is a chasuf shoresh, it has no earth around the roots, it's going to take at least 2 weeks for those roots to become self-sufficient. And then it's going to take another 30 days for that plant to become connected to the ground. Now, sorry, the 30 days, we're going to need those 30 days for the Orla. Because we're going to want to count before Shemitah a full 30 days, then we can get that whole year in as Orla. So, again, to summarize, if we're planting, we need 2 weeks for something to root, and 30 days to get it in as Orla. Otherwise, we can't count this year as the first year if we don't plant 30 days. That's two ba'av we'll have to plant by. We'll only get our first year in, will be the Shemitah year itself. You can, it will just mean a later year. You won't be able to count. No, you're not at that stage. This is year one. As you plant, that's your first year.
Right. You're not allowed to have the first year because the Shemitah year, because to close the Shemitah year, you go to the Seirah,
the people
who think
it's planted
on
it. I don't know. Okay. So, so that's as far as trees go. If we take regular trees that aren't fruit trees, then again, we've got to give that two-week period for the roots to take. The next thing is, if we plant trees that are in a pot, and then the whole discussion is, we'll also get into it with Shemitah, what constitutes a pot, but there has to be enough earth around the roots and of the tree that can sustain it, and for 2 weeks. And if there's enough earth, and when we plant, careful that the ball doesn't disintegrate, otherwise you're in trouble and you need the 6 weeks. But if it stays together in one ball and there's enough earth around it to sustain the tree, then you plant 2 weeks before and you can plant anything before. That's for trees and bushes. The next category is little annuals, flowers. Those are the little flowers that you plant. You need for that 4 days before Rosh Hashanah and then they'll take. What they do stipulate is that you shouldn't have to water in order to root whatever it is that you're planting. You shouldn't have to water in excess to root it. When you first plant any plant, right? So then the root system is not yet developed enough to go and search for the water. It's very much as you planted it on that day, that's where the roots are. So you have to really bring the water to the root and give enough water so that the plant can get that water and bring it. As the plant grows, it will be able to get water from further afield, a little bit outside of its exact area. So that's called, in Hebrew they refer to it as hashkayat hanbata, which is watering to get the plant to take. So in order to do that, you'd have to give excess water. That's something that we can't do post Rosh Hashanah. So you could plant up until Rosh Hashanah, whether it be trees, bushes, fruit trees, with earth, without earth, or little flowers. But following Rosh Hashanah, you can't be planting more. You can't be watering more. What we will be seeing is how we deal with the water for different classes of plants. Okay. As far as lawn goes, now there's two ways to plant a lawn. Today the most common, what you call sap, the most common way to plant lawn is it comes in strips that are half a meter by a meter and you lay them down. It takes about 6 weeks for this whole story to knit together. And that should be enough time. If you're planting that way, then that's how you would do it just before Shemitah. But if you did it the old-fashioned way and you took little lawn cuttings and dug them up and planted, so it would take a long time until all these little pieces of lawn came together. So you'd need to do that already in the spring. And the more you cut the lawn, which again we'll touch on later, and the more you water and fertilize, so too this lawn will come together. And the objective here is to have your lawn already complete by the time you get to Shemitah. Because if you haven't got a lawn that's fully knitted and closed together, actions that you'll be doing in Shemitah will enhance the growth of the lawn. And that's exactly what we don't want to do. Not for the lawn, not for any. So cutting enhances the growth. And soon, we will do some cutting, right? And see what actions bring about growth, stimulate growth, or just hamper growth. So here we go. Pruning. As a rule, one should not prune on Shemitah at all. However, having said that, there are certain times that we can prune. Just before we get that, the more we prepare now in the Shana Shishit, the less and better equipped we'll be to handle our Shemitah. So if we do things this year, we'll be in a position in our gardens that we won't need to do and address a lot of the problems that we're going to encounter in the Shemitah. So the idea is to prep now and then ride through the Shemitah relatively easily. Okay. There are different categories of trees. The first trees are the Nishirim, the deciduous trees, those that lose their leaves. The best time to prune those trees would be just towards the end of the winter. So they'll have lost all their leaves. You'll be able to see the skeleton of the trees, and we prune those trees now. That's gonna be the end of the winter, and then there'll be little touch-ups just before Rosh Hashanah, around the fall, that we'll do for those trees. You also get trees that are half nashir mutneh, they half deciduous. Depends on how cold it's gonna get. They'll either lose their leaves or not lose. And those trees we can prune throughout the summer and again towards the fall. And the third category is evergreens, like ficuses or conifers that are green the whole year round, and we'll prune those trees just before Shemitah. Again, the key thing here being, do the pruning before you get to Shemitah. Once we've done that, we won't have a problem in Shemitah if we've pruned beforehand, because we can't prune properly in Shemitah. That's going to stimulate and enhance growth, so we want to get that done before the Shemitah. As far as cutting and pruning bushes go, so again, sometimes this is very halacha lemaaseh. You see it often. One may have a hedge in, or a privet, what you call it, in your garden, and you want to keep it at a certain height. Now, if it's already fully developed and it's reached the height that you want it to be at, like in your garden, right? So on Shemitah, there won't be any problem of cutting it on that height. Because the action we're doing is the exact same action that we'd be doing if we wanted to stimulate the growth. But we have a height. It's reached that height, and that's where we want to keep it. So what we do, we are permitted to sustain a plant at the specific height, provided it's already reached that height, we can keep it like that. That's for a hedge. If we have a hedge, sometimes you see never one plant doesn't mamash take off. Happens, right? You can have a whole row of them, and one is just small. So all the others you could cut, and it wouldn't be a problem. But this one, you couldn't cut it, because that action, he hasn't reached the height, and he's down here. The action of cutting is going to stimulate the growth for that plant, so that would not be permissible in such a case. Sometimes you get like a topiary, which is a round ball, that's down at the bottom in the shul over here. So those you can, because the interest is not to grow this thing into something bigger. It's to maintain the existing shape. But you can only maintain an existing shape provided it's already reached that existing shape fully. And again, you know, the gardener knows, the person doing the work has to be honest with himself what his intentions and kavanot are. But the guiding line here is you can prune an existing shape, but it has to have already reached fully that existing shape. Another and the stage that the plant is in that you're doing the action on. Another time where we're going to be pruning is when it comes to schach. We're going to be cutting the schach. So what's good for the tree is to cut as close as possible to the tree. When we cut away from the tree, so that's not so good for the tree. So you'll see this year, if we cut palm branches or eucalyptus branches, whatever people use for schach, the technique that's used will determine your intention. And this year we're not looking for the what's best for the tree, we just want the schach. So Lamasa, you're going to cut 30, 40 centimeters away from the branch of the tree. Especially with schach, because with palm branches, you cut right up against it and do away with all those thorns. This year we're going to leave all the thorns around, and after Shemitah we'll come back and clean it up. So that's as far as schach goes. Obviously, if something is in the way, if it's a pathway that people would walk through, or if there are power lines up above, anything that causes nezek or is problematic, so there's no, my understanding, there's no extra mitzvah, or you're keeping Shemitah better because you haven't cut it. Lehefech perhaps. If there's power lines and it constitutes a potential danger, cut the tree, right? Don't wait for it to fall on the power lines because you're keeping Shemitah. You're keeping Shemitah, but you're doing damage somewhere else. So, what's the thing about common sense? It's not so common, right? But if you use a lot of that, then we can make good decisions as far as the Shemitah goes. There's often, I find in Yadut, there's like the concept of if it doesn't hurt, then we're not doing it properly, right? So it doesn't have to hurt. There's no bonus points here for walking into your palm tree for the whole year because you didn't want to cut one branch. If it's in the way, it's disturbing. Rabbi, if I'm wrong, correct me, right? This is my own personal take on it. But cut the branch and walk past, right? If you need to tie it up, so do so. But again, try to do all these things before the Shemitah comes. So that's pretty much as far as pruning goes. There's one more category, which is a murkav. A murkav is if we graft one type of a tree onto another. Obviously something that's permissible, which is a min bimino. So for example, they'll have like a chushchash on a citrus. And they'll take the chushchash because it has strong roots, and a different orange, and put it onto those roots. That grafting is halachically a permissible route of grafting. It's not a key line. But what does happen sometimes, the chushchash is very strong and it will send out branches from below the graft. It will send out branches from below the graft. If you see that the rootstock is overpowering the rocheb, what you've grafted on, then it would be permissible to cut those branches that are coming. What I did see is that how do you define what is damage? For a tree, what constitutes damage? So the answer is if it can recover in a year or 2 years from the setback that it suffered, then that's not damage. But if it's going to have permanent consequences to not taking care of it, then you can take care of it. So that's helpful to know what to do when you can cut something. Pushkash is a type of a citrus. There's different varieties. It's a type of a citrus. It's like a bit more like a lemon than anything else, but it hasn't got tasty fruit or anything like that. But it's got a very, very strong root system. So you use that root system, and then they put oranges onto it or anything else, clementinas onto it, just to have the benefits of that.
You're allowed to graft another citrus on a...
Yes, because it's the same species. You couldn't graft an apple tree onto a citrus tree. That's already
like
killer.
That's an ugly fruit. Okay, if you have an ugly fruit.
No.
The citrus looks like it's Rogan, it's not a Rogan. And I remember when I was in Florida, it was grafted onto grapefruit tree because it increased that would
okay.
be considered.
No, that's fine. They're all part of the same family. All the citrus is one family. But you couldn't take something completely different, like I mean, it wouldn't work, a banana tree, a banana. But you couldn't take a banana tree and put that onto a citrus tree. All the citrus stays together. The peaches, the nectarines, the plums. As long as they're in their own families, it's not mixed in. Yeah? Good. Okay. Cool. So that's the pruning side of things. Now, as far as fertilizing goes... So on Shemitah itself, we're not going to fertilize at all, because fertilizer is there to help the plants, to stimulate the growth, and to get the garden looking better, and the fruit, everything is enhanced through fertilizer. So on Shemitah, we won't do any fertilizer. Having said that, we fertilize before Shemitah, and today there are fertilizers that are slow release fertilizers. You can get for 3 to 4 months. For 6 to 8 months. So before Shemitah, we're going to fertilize with these in the fall, just before Rosh Hashanah, and that's going to see us through for 6 months in Shemitah. We'll also put down compost around the trees, and that takes longer to break down and for the plants to absorb. So pretty simple with the fertilizer. If you're fertilizing in sandy soil or heavy clay soil, that'll be different. But we're not going to get into the actual nitty-gritty of it here tonight. You can email me or call me, I'm happy to help. But conceptually, fertilize before Shemitah, use slow-release fertilizers, and that will see us through at least 6 months into the Shemitah, and then we'll fertilize when we come out of the Shemitah.
Slow-release is a Hiddush. We learned that it's okay because you're actually the field is getting fertilized on Shemitah. It's just you're not doing an action to do
yes.
it.
I thought also to fertilize in the water rather than to sprinkle it by hand. I thought within that was better if you had to fertilize and you had a problem where you needed to give fertilizer. So rather to fertilize
directly.
No, indirectly.
Rather than fertilizing directly,
yes.
You put it into the water.
Putting it into the water. And as we're touching on it now, watering, the same is for watering. Better to water, because you want to be watering less. We'll go into it when we get to the watering section. But also better to water with a computer than to water by hand directly. So that's as far as fertilizing is. Now, the next thing we're going to be bothered by, and that's the weeds. There are always going to be weeds in the garden. The good book says 1 year's weeds is 7 years' seeds. Right? So you want to try to get rid of the weeds before. If we can stay on top of the garden all the time, then we'll reduce the weeds. We'll never eliminate them completely. But there are actions we can take, again, before Shemitah to have less weeds, because it's very problematic getting rid of weeds in the Shemitah. What do I mean by that? We can firstly do all the actions. We can spray before Shemitah, we can weed whack, we can pull it out, we can use the hoe, we can do whatever is at our disposal to get rid of the weeds. Once we get into Shemitah, we can't. And there's an order that we follow in order, because what is the actual problem with weeding? The problem with weeding is when you weed, like it or not, you're turning the ground and you're working the ground. And that's the exact action that we don't want to be doing on the Shemitah. So the order of how to read is as follows. The first thing you do is to spray. Spraying is a relatively, what's the word, non-obtrusive action. You come from above, you don't touch the plants, and you spray. And you can, there are different sprays that will kill weeds in grass and not kill the grass. They're sprays that know whether it's a broad leaf, a thick round leaf, or a little thin leaf like a grass leaf. And depending on what your problem is, you can choose one of those sprays to get rid of the weed. Your first option is to spray. The next option would be to take like a weed whacker or something, and you'd cut the weeds above the ground. So you're still leaving it all intact on the ground and not coming into contact with the ground. Your next section would be to actually cut it. You'd physically take the scissors or the pruning shears and you'd cut the bottom of the weed. And then you could also take a weeding tool, like a knife, and stick it into the ground to cut it and then pull it out. And the last case you'd do, if these didn't work for you, is to actually take the weed physically by hand and pull it out of the ground. So first we'll try all the others. If we're not successful, then we'll pull it out. At which stage? What's less contact with the ground? Before you can do everything, on Schmitter. Before it doesn't matter, right?
What needs to happen in order to enable you to do that, Schmitter?
Well, that's exactly where we're at. Right, so what needs to happen in order to enable us to do that on Schmitter, the plants need to be suffering. How would the plants be suffering? And or if irreversible damage would be done. So, one of those two. The plants are always in competition for sunlight and for water. If you've got a little plant and a big weed grows on top of it, and the way of the world is such that the weeds grow better than the plants and they grow on top of them, so if that little plant's going to die, then you could take care of that weed. And you would take care of that weed in this order. You'd try and spray it out, you'd try and weed whack it, or you'd cut it, or you'd cut it in the ground, or you'd pull it out. But if you deem the fact that this plant's going to be destroyed, then you could take out the weed. And the other thing is, if your garden would become overrun, there are certain weeds that you don't want to have them in your garden. Specifically like cider, or Boker Tov it's called, if you've got that, you want to try and eradicate that and not let it go for a year, because you'll struggle to get rid of it afterwards. If you have types of kayetzet, then every flower has, I don't know how they know this, but this is what the books say, has 500,000 seeds. So you don't need a high percentage germination to like lose your field or your garden according to these weeds. So those weeds you would try and get rid of. And again, you don't necessarily have to start pulling them out and digging them. You could just cut off the tops. And that'll take care of the flower, which will become the seed. So you've sorted it out in that way. So if the weeds cause a problem to the plants, or they're going to cause a long-term problem, you can take them out in the way we mentioned. Another area, not related to the garden, but yes to weeds, is if you've got an area that could be a dangerous area. What do we mean by that? If there's long grass and weeds and things are hidden and children play and it's not safe, again, it's not so much a question. Clearly, take care of that. If it's an area that's completely overgrown and rodents could live there, and as a result snakes will come to that area, again, there's not a problem to take care of it. There's no, you know, like I said, it doesn't have to hurt, right? If you see it's potentially a problem and it's going to cause a bigger problem, then the Shemitah, on my interpretation at least, is such that it's flexible to clean out the weeds, clean out the debris, make sure there aren't rodents, that you don't want to have an area that's inviting for snakes to be if you've got children that live there because of Shemitah. That's a contradiction in the way I interpret it. So that's in terms of weeding. Now, there's an area of fruit. Many of us have fruit trees in our garden, and especially the summer fruits, all the peaches, nectarines, they have a lot of flowers. And one of the actions we do is to reduce the amount of flowers. We want to do that so that we get a better quality fruit. Instead of having four little fruits on one branch, we rather have one big fruit than four little fruits. in order to do this, we do dilul, thinning out. So we can do that in different stages. The first stage is the flowers. You can just shake the tree or beat it with a stick, and you reduce a lot of the flowers. It's a bit of a gamble, because you don't know if you're destroying flowers that have been pollinated or not. Your assumption is they've all been pollinated, and therefore you're eliminating. But you could be wrong, and you've eliminated, and then you have no fruit at all. But it's a risk we have to take. Yes, on Shmita, right? You can beat the stick. Yes, it would be, because you'd be not. I'm not sure if you could. Yes.
What they allow, what the machon allows, is to get the same quality fruit that we grow every year.
The
that's l'upmi peri. That would be called l'upmi peri.
Where it does become a problem, and you have the kushat shvi'it, is if you go already to the next stage where the flowers have germinated. Now you've got little fruits. Now normally what we do, well, we try to thin out the tree by reducing the amount of flowers, and now we've got fruits, but we see we've still got too many fruits. You see like four pomelos all growing together. We just want one over there. So normally it wouldn't be a problem. We would just take off the fruits and they would be there. But now these fruits that we take off, they're baby fruits. They have kedushat shvi'it already. It's not so simple to just take them and throw them away or dispose of them. So you wouldn't just be able to do that. Having said that, there isn't. What does happen, the tree becomes too heavy, and then you'll have a lot of fruit on the tree. And what can happen, I had one instance with a client. I said, look, we need to thin out the flowers. She said, no, it's a chaval on the flowers, don't take off the flowers. So we didn't take off the flowers. So then we had like lots of fruit. I said, look, we've got really too much fruit. The tree can't sustain all this fruit. So she said, no, it's a chaval on the fruit. No. And the tree got heavier and heavier. Eventually the branch broke. And that was the real biggest chaval, right? Because in the end you lose the tree. And the halacha permits, in the case where you see that it's going to actually break the tree, then you could take off the fruit. Because again, the intention here is not to have the other fruits be bigger and better, but the intention is to save the tree, to prevent having damage that is irreparable. If you, for example, a plum or a pear tree, it takes 2 years to, when you've cut a branch, it will only be 2 years later that you'll see fruit coming off from where you've pruned. So if a big branch breaks, that's a big loss. So we'll try again. The same guidelines keep coming up over and over again, where we want to prevent doing something that isn't recoverable within a reasonable period of time, that being a year to 2 years.
Do you spray?
To prevent
different types of spray.
There is a spray, we don't do that so much, but there are sprays that will prevent flowers from coming.
And I'm talking about stum in the garden.
Yes,
there's fertilizer spray, there's sprays that kill bugs.
Yes, but in Shemitah we won't be spraying so much.
Not even to kill bugs?
If it poses like a real problem for the tree. I don't like even non-Shemitah to use sprays unless you have to. But sometimes you do have to. But most times the trees will get over it themselves. If the garden is healthy, the bugs won't come. Nature is very specific. It will attack the weak and finish them off. But if it's strong, then you won't have these issues. So if you, it's like a human body, I guess. If you're fit and healthy and watch your diet, then your chance of getting sick or less is at the garden. So prevention is what we're trying to get at you. And if you have to and it's ill, then you can. So that's for thinning out fruit. We're now going to move on to the next section, which is lawn care. So the lawn is perhaps one of our strongest plants. It's the only plant that we can actually abuse and it still comes back to a certain extent. I'm not talking about the synthetic lawn now, this is the real lawn. So the action that what lawn needs is sunlight and water, not too much wear and tear walking on it, and a bit of fertilizer. The action that really helps the lawn is when you cut it. When you keep cutting your lawn, so that's what makes it grow, because it gets thicker and it spreads out, and that's what helps the lawn. So in Shemitah, what we're going to do with our lawn is, we don't want it to get destroyed, so we're going to keep doing all these actions, but we're going to do them one step less than we normally do. That means just a little bit less. We don't have to suddenly, you know, after we've worked on our lawn for 6 years, let it go to wreck and ruin. We just have to treat our lawn one step back from whatever it is that we were doing. What are these steps? As far as the water goes, we give 10 to 15% less water of what we've been giving usually. There are formulas for all these things. It works out 3 liters per meter per day, and you calculate that over a week, and you divide it into 2 to give 2 water rooms.
And then again, what's the point? That this is the watering that will
that
not
will
allow
keep it,
it to
but
die.
Not make it go thrive. It will keep it, but
keep it and not thrive.
That's right. It will survive and not thrive. And that's how we're going to water. As far as the fertilizer goes, we're not going to fertilize on Shemitah. We fertilize before Shemitah. We'll get through the Shemitah. We'll fertilize again after Shemitah. The fertilizer is going to enhance and do a lot for it. We don't do that on Shemitah. As far as the cutting goes, we're going to cut higher. If we've set the lawnmower on level 3 or whichever the level is you've set it on, go one step higher. You're going to cut it a bit higher, because that low cutting will cause it to thicken out and to spread out more. So by doing these actions, we're going to not do the maximum we can in order for our lawn to be as strong, as lush, as green as it can, but we don't need to destroy the lawn at the same time. So if you don't cut it, the lawn will get sick. It will get sick. Also, the surface area will increase because it's longer, and then it will use more water, and you're giving less water, so you'll get into a cycle of it getting sick. Sometimes you don't, and all of a sudden you cut it, the bottom of the lawn is white, and that will get sunburned if it's in the summer, and then that will die and it will get destroyed. So you want to keep it at a level. You normally want to take off 2 to 3 centimeters of lawn at any cutting. Sometimes with kukuya it's more, because it grows that much in a few days. But you want to keep at it regularly and not let it get too long. Otherwise you get into trouble. That way. So that's lawn. We'll now move on to roses, right? Roses are a difficult plant because they need a lot of care. My lecturer at the Hebrew said the rose is either the most prettiest or the ugliest plant in the garden. It depends on how much care it gets. So the first thing about roses is they like a lot of water, and if you don't give them the water, then they're going to suffer, and they won't recover once they've suffered. So again, whatever you water in your rose, you continue to give it water, a little bit less, but there's no point in bringing the rose into making it suffer and to drying out the rose. A rose, by the way, can live for 500 years. In France, there are roses that are 500-600 years old. So it's a very, very strong plant, but it certainly needs care. The thing about the rose is the more you cut it, the more flowers you'll get. So you can't do that. At the same time, you have a rose, you can cut it and take benefit from that flower. So where do we draw the line, and how do we decide at which point we cut it? So we'll look soon, there's some roses there, how we cut, and then we'll see what cuttings make the rose grow. We can decide whether we want a long stem or a short stem, whether we want it to go in a certain direction, and that's all by exactly where we'll cut the rose along the stem. So we'll look at the roses soon. There's another time when we can prune, and this is, I didn't mention, for anything, especially the roses, if a branch is sick or has a bug or something, we don't have to wait for that to spread to the whole tree. We can just cut the sick branch and dispose of that, and that's not a problem on Shemitah. The same as even pruning, and you put ointment on. You seal the wounds with an ointment. We're not doing that in order to enhance. we do those actions to protect. So anything that we're doing to protect what's already there is permissible on the Shemitah. What you would not be allowed to do on Shemitah is to deadhead. What you do to increase flowering any plant, especially roses, you cut off all the dead heads. Cutting them off, then new flowers appear, because the plant knows it needs to make seeds. You take away the seeds, it realizes, oh, there's no seeds, there's no Dor Hemshech. So it makes more flowers to get to seeds. If you keep taking off the flowers, then then there are no seeds, the plant keeps making more flowers. So that's as far as roses go. One other point, on Shemitah, the fruit is Hefker. That means that anybody, you always put a sign up, right, outside your house, that people can come and help themselves and take. Two things. If something is not yet oral, it's not past its four, it hasn't been for day in the fourth year, and it hasn't passed its 3 years, so it's suggested to put a sign up on the tree that people should know that don't help yourself from this tree, from this fruit yet, it's still orla. That's one sign. And the other thing is you invite people to come into your house and take fruit. So this halacha everybody knows, that it's hefka and they can take. What they're not so familiar with, it seems pretty obvious, don't destroy the tree, right? When you come into someone else's house and you invite you, you're allowed to take the fruit that you want to take. So you could tell them, firstly, they have to ask your permission. It's not a free-for-all. And secondly, they have to be makpid not to destroy the tree when they take. And what I saw recently is that they can't take, like, for them, the family, the grandchildren, the cousins and everybody. You should take as much as you need for yourself, but not to clean out the tree simply because it's hefker.
What's so considered as much as you need for yourself today?
How many can you eat, Dr. Stenberg? not like you're going to store it. It's not like it's on sale and now you're okay with taking 4 kilos, right? A few, what you need.
You said that you have to ask permission.
Yes. You're not going to say no. I think it's a sensitivity. It's a person's tree, it's his property, it's his house. He's not going to say no to you, but behold him.
You
wouldn't just come into the garden and help yourself take a few and go. Yes. No, the fruit is hefka, but it's his vision. Okay, let's say the good one. Thank you.
No shear next week for both sides. Hanukkah, no shear.
You can. There are fields down at the bottom. I remember last Shemitah we went down to the bottom fields here by Machasia. I guess you'd have to find out. Close to the time, we'll see. The last
put
thing
a
is.
Put up a song when people are allowed to get in there.
I guess. Still your property. The fruit is hefka, still your property. Okay, the last thing we'll touch on and then we'll look at some cutting is the watering. So, to be successful in the garden, you need to water correctly. Too much water will have an adverse effect, not enough water will also. So you want to water enough. So whatever you're doing during the year, if you bring it down 10-15% less, will get you through the Shemitah just fine. And like I said, it's better to water with an automated watering system, that a computer is actually doing the action, same as with the fertilizer, rather than to open during Shemitah.
Does it have to be set before Shemitah starts?
No, I don't think so. Once it's set, it's set. Okay. It would be set, like some
time. Just lower the
quantity or the time, however it works. Yes.
You adjust
it like that. So that would be that. Even non-Shemitah, the computers pay for themselves plus more. Because the plants don't die. Because you either, it's like feast or famine if you're doing it by hand. You'll like forget, and then you'll walk past it two times. You say, I've got to do it today. And eventually you'll open the water, and you'll go to bed, and you'll wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning. You'll go, oh my God, I left on the water, right? You rush to close it. So a computer will eliminate that. You can set it, and it saves a lot of water. The plants don't die. It's mamash kedai. And in Shemitah, halachically, it's better to water that well. So that those are the topics that go through in more detail. Both these books have laid it out in more detail, and there are also tables of how much you need to fertilize, what type of soil you have, but all of that you can look it up or see. And then we'll just take a minute now towards the end to see how we prune and what the actions are. Let's say like this. If this was our rose, so normally, depends what kind of a rose, but we'd want another flower to cut. So we'd cut down here, just above the leaf, and then we'd get another short flower. If we wanted to get a long stem, we'd go here where there are already 5 leaves. If we cut over here, then we'd get a long stem that would come up. And the direction, just for common knowledge, if we wanted the next stem to come out facing this way, then we'd cut where this leaf is. If we wanted it to be this way, over here, we'd cut with where that leaf is. So we can decide by where we cut whether we're going to get a short stem and what the direction is that this next branch is going to come to. So that's that. What we shouldn't do is just cut it in the middle. If you do like that, because what happens is this will get dry and then the bugs will come in here and your rose could potentially get sick. So you wouldn't ever want to do that. You'd want to cut like right up against the leaf. That's a good cut, right up against the edge, and then that will seal itself and your new branch will come out from there and give you your flower. So again, if we wanted to shape the tree, let's say this is a young tree and we wanted to shape it before, so we'd want a central branch. So we'd get rid of all these side branches. Now normally, or let's say what we'll do on Shemitah, if this is in the way or it's disturbing or something, we'll just cut it over here, leaving that. Because our intention is to just eliminate the problem. But if we wanted to do what was really good for the tree, we'd always want to cut right up close. You get your shears as close as possible, find your best angle, right up against the branch, and then you'd cut to get a nice neat cut right up against. What's going to happen here, the tree will close around this, and this will disappear, and then you'll have one trunk. Whereas if we just cut like this, which is the Shemitah cut, what's going to happen is all these eyelets are going to wake up, and from here, there'll be branches. We'll get 5 or 6 new ones. So on Shemitah, that isn't beneficial to the tree. That's just to take care of something that's in the way or poking us or disturbing. We're going to cut like this. If this was a palm tree, the schach also, we'll cut it at the end. When we're cutting correctly during the year, then we want to get as close as possible to the trunk and then to cut. And that gives us a good cut. And then again, when you're cutting, you can choose the direction. Let's say this tree is growing like this and it's going over there. We don't want that. We want it rather to go up. Right, this is the branch. I'll hold it from here. So then, we'll cut down here. And now we can change the direction. So normally I see people have just come and they've pruned the tree. And it looks like a broom, you know. It looks like that, right? So you don't want to do that so much. You want to choose the main branches and extend the main branches. And shape the tree. So if this was a young tree, this is the type of thing we do before Shemitah, because you couldn't do this in Shemitah. But we try and shape it into some kind of a tree. So we take off this branch over here, and this is growing down. We want it to grow up, so we bring it from here. And here also we take down, and slowly, slowly, you give it a shape and expose the main branches. You finally got it. Vesed. So,
what about taking the logam
taking
the logam off a date palm? Any particular problem with that?
I'm not sure. I'm not lucky in the area. I guess it's okay because we do have lulavim, right?
Yeah.
Where they come from, El Arish, or from here, where they are, if there's a difference. But maybe they just cut it differently. Oh, any cutting that is done on Shemitah should be done with a shinui. I didn't mention. So any cutting that's done, if you do have to do it slightly differently than how you normally do.
If you
can.
What if you don't normally cut?
Take a knife.
Just cutting would be. But that is your shinur, right? So that is that. I saw something nice that the Rambam says, and this will close off. He says we can learn tima'on from trees, thirst from trees. So that trees can really go for a long time without water. And you see them thirsty, but they don't despair. He says if you look at a plantation of trees, he says it looks like people governing. He says their arms are always reached up, even if they've lost all their leaves. So they don't despair. Their arms are always reached up and they're always looking positively for the Yeshua, and you can learn tefillah from trees. So says the Rambam. We said it. Okay, for questions, I'm glad you took.
I don't know about in Israel, but in the States, like a lot of trees become green and they're like they're dying. You know, they get like diseased or something.
Okay.
What is that for?
It depends on the tree. Often there can be beetles that will destroy a tree, or not enough water is the first thing you'd look for. So whatever its cause is, sometimes there's a fungus that will attack a tree. Or
but these things can be prevented?
Yes. If it's normally a cause for it. Uh-huh. And then whatever that cause is, you start off by first seeing is the water okay? And then you'd look for bugs and for funguses. And normally it lies in that area. And then you'd sort it out from there. We didn't say it. Plants in the house have no din of Shemitah. There are four categories that need good question.
You know the merpeset, they don't have a din.
There are four categories that need to apply for a pot plant in order for it not to have a din of Shemitah. Now we'll see if I can remember all four, right? So the first, it needs to have a volume no greater than 330 liters. Then there's two se'ah. So that's quite a big area. That's a volume of 330 liters. If it's more than that, then it's too big. Right? The next thing is it needs to be inside the house. Mamash inside the house constitutes walls of 80 centimeters. That's a wall. And you can't move this thing in and out. The other thing, it needs to have no contact with the earth.
And a roof.
And a roof, obviously. And a roof. It needs to have no contact with the earth. So either it's on a tile or on plastic or something like that. Yes, but a tile that's non-porous. Right? Like this kind of a tile. Or concrete. Sambalakot or porous. Like what's in the street, the pavement, that's no good. Because that's mechubar lakarka. The point here being that it shouldn't be mechubar lakarka. Plastic containers, fine. PVC plastic, anything that it shouldn't be, and then you can treat it, you can plant into that, you can take it. The fruit that it produces. Because it's still Kedushat Shvi'it, you didn't take away from it. Again, you've got hydroponics is in water. It's not so much just the growing material. It's the size of the pot and where it's situated and where the ground is. But if it's very big, as long as it met the four criteria, then you'd be okay. As a pot, yes. But it would depend on the size. Some of the hydroponics are huge. That means
not your house.
No.
Even your house, if you have a pot.
And that's it. That's it. Alright.
Yeah.
Yes.
You mentioned it's about using primary fertilizer. So, is there any difference between that and putting on a shower pot with a fertilizer during the year?
You wouldn't want to do the action during Shemitah. Because that action is going to bring about. Direct, there's going to be a direct consequence of that action, which means that things are going to thrive and do well. As soon as you put it on, or it's in the water, you're going to do that. So you want to refrain from fertilizing milchakhila in Shemitah. You're fertilizing when it's not yet Shemitah. The fact that it breaks down slowly is to the plant's advantage, but you're not doing a physical action of going out there and fertilizing here and now. You can fertilize if a plant is sick and needs it, and then preferably in the water, through the water system, in liquid fertilizer, as opposed to pellets.
because it's like a drama almost. It's like one step removed, it's coming through the water. It's more susceptible, more available to the plant, and it's instant. But it's through the stick and not something that you've taken. And the whole thing is ibude karka, that you work in the ground. You're not.
Inside the house?
You said inside the house. You said the volume.
But if it's inside the house and I'm cooked, not cooked, doesn't make a difference, right? Yeah. But you're
no, because you're inside the house. The nakuv is cancelled out.
Mm-hmm.
You look it up. Is it in there?
If I go out to my house, I must be living. There's no roof. No roof.
Okay, so it says like this. It says Shabatit loina good in a hashviit, a lovely male at kol arbat at naim de la ayin. Eino naku, so it's not mechubar, it doesn't have a hole, right? Nimsa babait, that it's inside the house undercover with roofs and it stays there continuously. Eino gadol midai, the volume of the thing, and the last one is sponotav asuim mechomer bilti chadir l'shorashim. So that the roots, I would think this has to do with mechubar already, but it seems to be a separate part. Like the terracotta one, if it's permeable, then not.
How big the holes have to be?
2 centimeters.
What
is it about the roots? Mechomer bilti chadir l'shorashim. That roots shouldn't be able to go through the material of the pot. Yeah. I'm not sure what the difference between that would be and eino nakuv.
What if you have a merpeshet?
If it's non-permeable, that would be eino nakuv. So
if you have a merpeshet that doesn't have a roof on it, but they're in plastic containers.
It's outside.
It's outside.
In your windowsill.
The definition of inside is a roof.
So therefore you can't do any, you can give less water then, so more time.
But you need a wall around it, so it's tricky. Inside. No, maybe the burglar bar's around or something. It's got to be enclosed.
So bring it in that here. It doesn't have a roof, it's not good anyway.
The window's still there.
On top of the roof.
It's in the roof.
Yeah, but I'm very passive.
No, the window's not on the roof.
So, thank you everybody. Thanks so much for coming. I'm going to
go on. I like the one that garden too.
Yeah, that's it, right?